Okay, so very good evening to all of you. And so starting tonight and continuing for 6 evenings, Tuesdays and Thursdays for the next 3 weeks, we're going to do a class on meditation called How to Meditate. So it's like very basic. And I'm just curious, I know I see a lot of familiar faces, and you've been meditating for years and years and years. But are there any people here who are new to meditation, haven't done meditation before? Good. Because we will be starting from the beginning. And so what I plan to do is each week we will I'll spend some of the time talking and explaining meditation, and we will do some meditation together. We'll do different kinds of meditations, because in Tibetan Buddhism, we actually have quite a few different methods or techniques of meditation, so we'll be experimenting with different of these. And there'll be time as well for questions, if you want to ask questions at the end. And just before we begin, I just want to make sure everyone has turned off their phone or put it on flight mode, airplane mode, and also that you not take photographs during the class. Maybe in the last 5 minutes, if you really want to take a photo, you can do that in the last few minutes, but doing it during the class can be kind of distracting. Is that okay? Okay, so first of all, I'd like to talk about what is meditation. So meditation is not something exclusive to Buddhism. I think we can find meditation in most, if not all, other religions and spiritual traditions, Hinduism, Christianity, Judaism. I think all spiritual traditions have some kind of practice of meditation, even though they may not use the word meditation. They might use some other word, but something similar to that. And but I haven't studied all those other religions. I'm not an expert on world religions, so my expertise is Buddhism, and in particular Tibetan Buddhism. So I'll be explaining from that point of view. And the word for meditation in Tibetan language is gom. For example, I think we call this room the gompa. Gompa means the room where we practice meditation. And that word gom literally means to be familiar or to become familiar, to familiarize, to habituate. So the idea of meditation is that we are making our minds familiar with certain states of mind or certain feelings, certain practices. Because the idea is when we get familiar with or habituated to something, then it gets easier and easier. Similar, they talk about this in neuroscience. They talk about neural pathways. I'm not a scientist, but I've just read a little bit. So, you know, they say if we do something once and then twice and three times and so on, it sets neural pathways or creates neural pathways in our brain. And then it gets easier for that same way of thinking or same activity to happen again and again and again. Okay, so that's the idea of meditation, or gom, is we're trying to get familiar with certain ideas or practices or states of mind, positive ones, of course, not negative ones. So in a very general way, in Buddhism, we talk about positive states of mind and negative states of mind. So the positive ones are the ones that bring happiness and peace, good experiences to ourselves and to others. One of the best examples is love or loving kindness. I think I like the word loving kindness, metta in Pali language. You might be familiar with that. So this is the feeling we have for our loved ones, the people in your family, your friends, your children, your pets, yeah, if you have pets. So it's a very positive, warm, caring feeling for another person or for other beings. And when you have that in your mind, when you're able to feel that way, it's so good. It feels so good. It feels so nice. So you feel good yourself. Then when you treat somebody else in that way, in a loving and kind way, they probably feel good too. I mean, we know that from ourselves. When people are kind, smiling, friendly, gentle, kind, helpful to us, we usually feel pretty good, right? That's the way we want to be treated. So when people treat us that way, we feel really good. So when we treat other people that way, they usually feel good as well. So that state of mind of loving kindness, or we could just call it kindness, metta in Pali, maitri in Sanskrit, in Tibetan they call it jhampa. So that state of mind is a positive one. Why? Because it brings good experiences, good results to ourselves and to others. And it's also a very, very important quality to develop on the spiritual path. If you want to become a Buddha, or you want to become attain nirvana, attain liberation, you also need to develop that state of mind. It helps you get closer to those goals. So there's many positive states of mind. That's just one example. Another one is compassion, also patience, generosity, faith. Okay, so what we try to do in meditation is make our minds more and more familiar with these positive states of mind, so that then they become natural. They become our natural way of being, our natural way of feeling. We feel them more and more and more of the time, and for more and more and more people, instead of just a small circle of our family and friends, exclusive. You know, these are the only people I care about, and everybody else can take care of themselves. I don't care. So instead of having that attitude, we try to extend this feeling of kindness to more and more and more people, and eventually everybody. This is possible. On the path to Buddhahood, the path to liberation, one develops this universal, immeasurable feeling of kindness for everybody. So it's possible because of the way that our mind works. Whatever we are most familiar with, most habituated to, is what will come up most easily, most naturally. Like there are people who get angry a lot. Maybe every day, 100 times, 500 times, 1,000 times. Yeah, always angry, complaining and criticizing and saying really negative things. So somebody like that, okay, they are familiar with anger. That is what they are habituated to, what they are familiar with. And so because they're so familiar with anger, it just comes up easily. It just happens so easily. They're like almost addicted, we could say. They're addicted to anger. Okay, so it just happens again and again and again, really easily. Okay, so we say that anger or hatred is a negative state of mind because it makes everyone unhappy. It makes you unhappy when you feel it. It's also bad for our body, for our health. Scientists say that getting angry a lot is harmful for our health and shortens our life, raises our blood pressure, greater chance of heart disease and cancer and other kinds of illness. So it's bad for us, physically and also mentally, emotionally. It's also bad for other people, because when we get angry at others and throw our anger at other people, they get hurt. They get disturbed, scared, and hurt. So it just creates problems for you and also for other people. So that's a negative state of mind. So what we try to do in meditation is make our minds familiar with positive states of mind and less with negative states of mind, so that the positive ones, the kindness and compassion and so on, these will come up, will be part of us more and more naturally, more and more easily. We'll be able to feel them hundreds of times a day, and instead of anger, hundreds of times a day. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the mind can change. It is possible to change our mind, to change the way we feel, the kind of thoughts and feelings that come up. We can work on that and change. We can't expect this to happen like immediately, overnight, from one day to the next. But slowly, slowly, over time, like, it's really good to practice meditation every day if you can. And if you can manage every day, at least a couple times a week. But if we do that, if we practice meditation regularly and try to make our minds familiar with positive thoughts and feelings, positive states of mind, then we'll see changes happening. We'll see that we'll be able to feel these positive states more and more often, more and more easily, and they'll start to dominate our life. So that's the general idea of meditation. The word gom in Tibetan means to familiarize. And then the Sanskrit word for meditation is bhavana. And I think also in Pali and Sanskrit, bhavana. And that has the sense of cultivate, as in farming or gardening. Right? When you have a piece of land and you want to grow something like vegetables or flowers or crops, you sow, you till the land and you put the seeds and you put the water, and eventually you have these nice things coming up. Okay, so that's the meaning of cultivate. So meditation is also cultivating. We're trying to cultivate or grow positive states of mind, like kindness, compassion, concentration, wisdom, and so on. Okay, so then, meditation is something that's good for us, but it's also good for others, because if we can have more positive thoughts and feelings, positive experiences, then we'll be less likely to hurt other people, cause problems to other people in our relationships and our interactions with others and so on. So it's beneficial for them as well as for ourselves. So the real purpose of doing meditation in the context of Buddhism is that it's to work on our mind and bring about a gradual transformation of our mind from negative to positive, to try to have less of the negative thoughts and feelings and more of the positive thoughts and feelings. And again, the reason for doing that is to be of benefit, to help, to create more kindness and happiness in ourselves and in others. So meditation has become quite known and popular in Western countries. When I first started 44, 45 years ago, you didn't find many people in the West who were meditating. And it was even regarded with some suspicion, you know, like, what's that? But now things are quite different. A lot of people are meditating, and sometimes even doctors will prescribe meditation to their patients because it's been found, and there's research have shown that meditation can be very helpful for different kinds of problems such as stress, pain, physical pain, and depression, and other kinds of disorders like eating disorders, sleep disorders, and so on. So people who suffer from these kind of problems are sometimes recommended that they learn meditation, practice meditation, because it can be helpful. But in Buddhism, although of course it's good to be relaxed and it's good to be healthy and it's good to be happy, that's not the real purpose of practicing meditation. It's not just to have a nicer life, a healthier body, a happier mind. but it's actually to transform our mind, to bring about a transformation of our mind. But I'll talk more about that later. We don't need to go into that tonight. So tonight, I'll first talk about the posture, the recommended posture for doing meditation. And then we'll do some relatively simple practices, starting with a relaxation practice to kind of go through the body and relax different parts of the body. And then we'll do some meditation on the breath, being aware of the breath coming in and out, which is a very basic and it's not just a basic practice. It's also something you can be doing for the rest of your life. It's not just you do that in the beginning and you leave that behind and don't do it anymore, but you can continue doing that practice for the rest of your life. It's very, very beneficial for various reasons. Okay, so when we meditate, what it is that's meditating is our mind. Our mind, according to Buddhism, we have a mind and a body. Our body is this physical thing. Our mind is non-physical. Buddhism says we have a non-physical, non-material mind or consciousness. So it's not something that has physical features. We can't see it or touch it. It isn't made of particles. It doesn't have shape or color or size. It's just kind of energy of our consciousness, our awareness, all our thoughts, our feelings. So when we practice meditation, it's mainly our mind that is meditating. We're using our mind when we meditate. We're using our mind to understand our mind and work with our mind and transform our mind. So it's primarily something done with the mind, not with the body. However, our mind and our body are interconnected. They're not like totally separate and unconnected. They do affect each other. We can see that. For example, when we're feeling sick, when we feel sick or we have pain, then our mind will also be affected. You know, we'll feel tired, sleepy, maybe grumpy, grouchy, irritated. Okay? So what's happening with our body does affect our mind, but also the other way around. If our mind is in a bad state, then we'll feel it physically. You know, we can feel physically unwell. And again, the studies have shown that there's definitely a connection between mental states and the state of our health. So they do affect each other. So, therefore, what we do with our body will have an effect on our mind, and that is true for meditation as well. So that's why it's said to be quite important to sit in a particular way, to have a particular posture when you meditate, to help your mind be more focused and be able to meditate better. So in our tradition, and I think it's pretty similar in other traditions of Buddhism as well, it's recommended that if you can, you sit cross-legged. Most people are able to do that. But it doesn't mean that if you can't sit cross-legged, you can't meditate. You can meditate sitting in a chair. Good news for those who can't sit cross-legged. So you can sit in a chair or on the floor, cross-legged. Some people also use a kind of bench. There's these, I don't know if they have them here, but these little benches that you kneel, you have your knees on the floor, and then you sit on the bench with your feet under the bench. Maybe it's a little hard to describe, but anyway, I know in the West many people use that because they have trouble sitting cross-legged, but that kind of thing they can use. So it doesn't matter that much how you sit. The most important thing is keeping your back straight. So whether you're sitting on the floor or you're sitting in a chair, it's good if you can keep your back straight because the mind runs through the body. It's a kind of non-physical energy, but it moves through the body on these channels, kind of psychic channels. The main one is in the middle of our body, running from the top of the head down to the base of the spine, just in front of the spine. So that's like the main highway for the mind to move through the body. So if our back is straight, then that channel will be straight, and the mind will be able to move or function most effectively, most clearly. And you can see that yourself. You know, for example, if you're listening to a lecture, a talk, or you're having a conversation with somebody, and if you sit in a slouched way, you'll probably notice that your mind is not very clear and focused, right? It's kind of messy. But if you sit up straight, you're more focused, more attentive. So you can experiment with that and see for yourself if it's true. But anyway, that's what's recommended, that we sit with our back straight. But the shoulders should be relaxed, not like this, tight and tense. So let your shoulders drop and be relaxed. And so if you are sitting cross-legged, there's different ways you can cross your legs. So it's up to you to find a way that's comfortable. There's what's called the full lotus position. If you're a yogi, you practice yoga, you might be able to sit like that, but not many people are able to do that. That's when you have your feet, each foot is on the thigh of the opposite leg, so you're right foot is on top of your left leg and your left foot is on top of your right leg. So your legs are really like this, twisted, like a pretzel. So if you can sit like that, then that's great. But if you can't, it's okay. Another posture is called a half lotus. And that's where you have one foot up on the thigh of the opposite leg and the other foot is on the floor. But for some people, that may be uncomfortable as well. So then you can just have both feet on the floor, or whatever's comfortable. Whatever's comfortable. It is important to be comfortable and not put yourself into a really painful position. Okay? And also, it's good to be in a position where you'll be able to sit still for a period of time, however long you're meditating. I mean, it doesn't mean you can't move. Okay? It is okay to move. If the position you're in gets uncomfortable, it is okay to move. But in a group like this, you need to be careful, because if you move too much, you might disturb the people around you. And it's better not to do that. So it's better to... Also, when you move, if your body moves, it also affects your mind. If your body moves, your mind moves too. So to have a really still, quiet mind, it's better to try to sit still as much as possible. So the best thing is try not to move too much, but if it's, you know, it gets really uncomfortable, it is okay to move, but just make sure you do it quietly so you don't disturb the people around you. Then the hands, in our tradition, our teachers recommend having the hands in the lap with the left hand on the bottom and the right hand on top. And the palms are facing upwards. And then the two thumbs touching like this. So this has to do with the flow of energy in the body. It's said to be the best way for the energy to move in the body. Then you just have your hands like that resting in your lap or on top of your feet if your foot is there. If you've learned another way of holding your hands and you want to continue that, that's okay too, because, you know, there are different ways in different traditions. And then don't have your arms pressed against your sides, because doing that can cause heat to build up in your body, and if your body gets too warm, that can influence your mind and you can start to get sleepy. So having the arms a little bit away from your sides allows the air to circulate. You can stay cool and awake and alert. And then, as I already said, let your shoulders relax. Don't have them hunched tight. And then for the head, it's recommended not to have the head up too high nor down too low. Instead, just slightly bent downwards, just a tiny bit. Have your mouth and jaw relaxed, not clenching your teeth. And it's best when you breathe during meditation, if you can, breathe in and out through your nose, your nostrils, unless they're totally blocked. So breathe through your nose, and then your mouth would be closed. And have the tip of your tongue touching the roof of your mouth behind the upper teeth. So the reason for that is that we won't need to swallow so much. Swallowing could become a distraction if your mind gets really calm and quiet. So that cuts down the need to swallow. Then for the eyes, I think in the beginning people usually like closing their eyes when they meditate. Then it's easier to concentrate because you're not seeing anything. But the Tibetan teachers, and I think other traditions as well, say this, that it's actually better to keep your eyes open a little bit, because closing the eyes can lead to sleepiness. Like when we, you know, it's bedtime, we go to bed, we close our eyes, and we immediately go to sleep. So closing the eyes can be a sort of invitation for the mind to go to sleep. But we don't want to do that when we're meditating. We want to stay awake, alert. So to prevent sleepiness, it's recommended to have the eyes open just a little bit. And then have your gaze looking down onto whatever in front of you, your lap or the floor, table. So in that way, there's some light coming into our eyes, and that helps us to stay awake and alert. But we don't have our eyes open so much that we would be seeing things, movement and so on around us that might distract our attention. So try that, but some people might find it hard to do, hard to keep their eyes just partially open like that, or hard to not be distracted by things that you see. So if you do find it difficult and distracting keeping your eyes open, it is okay to let them close. But if you do, just try to notice if you're starting to feel sleepy and nodding off. And if you are, if that's happening, then you can counteract that by opening your eyes a little bit. And it does get easier, even if it's uncomfortable or difficult in the beginning. If you keep doing it, eventually it gets easier. So that's the recommended posture for meditation. And then the breathing, the way of breathing, should be normal, natural, not in any kind of forced or unnatural way. Also, you should try to avoid controlling the breath. I've never had this problem myself, but some people say that whenever they try to do breathing meditation and focus on the breath, they start controlling their breath. So ideally, that shouldn't happen. Try to avoid that. If you notice it happening, try to just let it go. Because in fact, we don't need to do that. Our body knows how to breathe on its own. When we're asleep, when we're unconscious, our body continues to breathe. So, you know, we don't have to tell our body to breathe. We don't have to control our breathing. So try to just let go of any sense of controlling your breathing. Just allow the body to breathe naturally. So first, I'm going to take you through a relaxation technique to try to make sure we're as relaxed as possible, and then we'll move into meditation on the breath. So what we're going to do is go through the body mentally with our awareness from the top of the head down to the toes. And if you notice tension anywhere in the body, see if you can just let it go. Consciously relax and let go of the tension. So just try to stay with me when I mention a part of the body. Focus on that part of the body. Relax that part. And then we'll move on to the next one. So first feel the top of your head. Relax the top of your head. Then move your awareness down into your forehead. Let your forehead relax. Let go of any worry lines, worry wrinkles you may have in your forehead. Then feel your eyes. Relax the muscles around your eyes and behind your eyes. But still trying to keep your eyes partially open, looking downwards. Then relax the rest of your face. We have many muscles in our face. So let all those muscles relax. Let your whole face relax. But you can leave a little bit of a smile on your mouth, on your lips. Smiling a little bit can actually help your mind to feel more relaxed and peaceful and happy. And then feel the right side of your head. Relax any tension there. Relax the back of your head. Relax the left side of your head. Now go inside of your head. Relax your brain. All the cells in your brain. Your skull. So let the whole of your head, both the inside and the outside, be as relaxed as possible. Then move your awareness down into your neck. Relax your neck. The back of your neck and the front of your neck, your throat. From there, let your awareness move down into your shoulders, the upper part of your back, your shoulder blades and shoulder muscles. That's an area where we often have a lot of tension, especially if you're working at a desk, at a computer, many hours. If there's any tension there, you can let it go. Imagine that it evaporates and disappears in space. And then let your awareness continue to move down through your back, relaxing any tension in the middle part of your back. And then the lower part of your back. All the way down to the base of your spine. Let the whole of your back be as relaxed and free of tension as possible. Then move your awareness to the front part of your body, starting with your chest. Let your chest relax, including the organs inside, your lungs, your heart. Any tension, let it evaporate, vanish in space. And then move your awareness further down into your torso, your diaphragm and abdomen, all the different organs, the stomach, the digestive system, all the muscles. All become loose, open, relaxed. Any tension evaporates, disappears. All the way down to the base of the torso, the pelvic area, hips. And then let your awareness move down into your right leg. Relax the upper part of your right leg. Then relax your knee. Then the lower part of the right leg. Then your ankle and foot, right foot. All the way down to your toes. And then shift your awareness to your left leg. First the upper part of the left leg. Relax that area. And then your left knee. And then the lower part of your left leg. And the ankle and foot, all the way down to the toes. And finally, the arms. Start with your right arm, the upper part of your right arm. Feel that and relax any tension there. And then the lower part of the right arm. And then the wrist, hand, and fingers. Then the left arm, starting with the upper part, relax that area. And then the lower part of the left arm. And then the wrist, hand, and fingers. So now we've gone through the whole body quickly, trying to relax as much of the tension as possible. And try to keep your body as relaxed and free of tension as possible for the rest of the time that we're meditating. If you do notice tension coming up in any part of the body, you can again put your awareness at that place. Consciously let go of the tension, let it relax. But otherwise, let's focus our attention now on our breathing. Again, let your breathing be natural, natural, steady rhythm, without trying to control your breathing, just letting your body breathe on its own, naturally. There's different ways you can pay attention to the breath. Some people pay attention at the nostrils. You may be able to feel the sensation of the air, the breath, coming in and going out of your nostrils, or on the upper lip, just below the nostrils. (Clears throat) So that's one possible place to be aware of the breath. Another one that's sometimes used is the abdomen, the lower belly, which usually moves in and out a little bit with each breath. That in-out movement. There's sensations there as the breath is moving in and out, the belly is moving in and out. So that's another place you might want to watch your breath, be aware of your breath. But you could also find your own way. The important thing is staying with the breath, being aware of the inhalation, then the exhalation of each breath, one breath after another. And the mind will wander away. That's normal, because normally our mind is very busy, doesn't stay with one thing for more than a few seconds before it goes to something else. So that's the normal habit of our mind. So if you find your mind wandering away from the breath, don't be surprised or ashamed or upset. It's just normal. But when you do notice that your mind has wandered away from the breath, bring it back. Whatever else is going on at the moment isn't so important. You can always put it aside till later. So there are thoughts that come up, or sounds in the room, or sounds outside. You might feel other sensations in your body, your nose itches, you know, pain in your back. There's all kinds of other things that our mind can go to. So when you notice that's happened, just let go of or put aside that other experience. Come back to the breath. And even if you have to do that again and again, don't worry. It's okay. It's normal. But one thing that can be helpful to stay with the breath is to count your breaths. So one way of counting is to say, breathing in, breathing out, one. Breathing in, breathing out. So you can just say that to yourself quietly in your mind, not out loud, just mentally. Breathing in, breathing out, and then count each breath. If you're new to meditation, just count up to five and then go back to one. If you're more experienced, you could count up to 10 and then go back to one. And again, anytime you know your mind goes away from the breath, just gently bring it back. So let's do that together for about 10 minutes. Okay, so you can change your position if you need to. So, if you had the experience that it was hard to stay concentrated on your breathing and you had a lot of thoughts, distractions, don't worry, don't feel bad, that's quite normal. And that's the way our mind is most of the time, but we just don't notice it. So, actually, I read an article not long ago about some study that had been done. I think it was Microsoft who did this study. And they compared people's attention span now and in the past, like 10 years, 15 years ago. And they found that it's gotten much worse since cell phones, since, you know, the advent of cell phones. Everybody has cell phones and constantly texting, checking your phone, checking your messages, your apps, and so on. So I forget exactly the figures, but what I do remember was they say human attention span has gotten worse than that of a goldfish. A goldfish are kind of notoriously distracted, inattentive, yeah. But human beings have gotten even worse than that. Our attention span is worse than goldfish. That's pretty depressing, isn't it? But it's not, you know, that there's nothing we can do about that. We can train our minds to be more attentive. But it's not only a problem that's occurring now, because in some of the texts from the past, the Buddhist masters in the past, centuries ago, when they're talking about meditation, they say that, you know, when people first start to meditate, they sometimes think that their mind has become more busy than before. Yeah, it seems like before I was meditating, my mind wasn't so crazy, and now I'm trying to meditate, my mind is just crazy. So even centuries ago, people thought that their mind became more busy when they tried to meditate. And so the masters who write these texts say, no, it's not true. It's not like that. Your mind is always busy, but you just didn't notice it. You only notice it when you try to meditate. So think about that, if that's true or not. I mean, if we just think about how we spend our time, what we do most of the day, our attention is just constantly going from one thing to another. There's so many things to pay attention to. If you know, work and your phone and people, what they're doing, what they're saying, your own thoughts, blah, 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 blah. I mean, it's just constant jumping from one thing to another. But when we're not meditating, when we're not sitting, trying to sit still and trying to focus on one thing like the breath, we don't notice how busy our mind is. But it's only when we do this, we sit down, we try to calm down, we close our eyes, we focus on our breathing or whatever you're focusing on, that's when it becomes obvious how busy your mind is. Then it's like you're turning your attention inside rather than out there, and so you just become much more aware of what's going on inside. Then you see how busy, how crazy your mind is. So please, don't think that meditation is making you more busy, more crazy. You're just becoming aware of how busy your mind is normally. And also, it's, you know, I mean, just the fact that we become aware of that, just noticing how busy our mind is and noticing when our mind wanders away, that's already a good thing. That's already a positive step, a step in the right direction. Because most people running around, not meditating, they don't know how crazy their mind is, how busy their mind is. For them, that's just normal. And they don't even try to do anything about it. So taking the first steps in meditation, you know, inevitably we become aware of, we notice how busy our mind is. But the more we practice, the more we start to learn to calm down. And also I think sometimes people have the wrong idea or the wrong expectation about meditation. They might think that, oh, when I meditate, all my thoughts should stop. There shouldn't be any thoughts. And if there are thoughts, they think, oh, what's wrong? Am I doing it wrong? Or maybe it's not working. Or maybe I can't do it because there's still these thoughts. So if you have any idea like that, it's not true. Just because you're meditating, your thoughts are not going to stop. They keep going because this is what we are habituated to, what we are used to, what our mind normally does. So you're not going to get your thoughts to stop. But what you can do is learn to stop following them, not follow every single thought that comes up, and just keep coming back to your object, the object of your meditation. So in this case, it's the breath. We're using the breath. And using the breath, I mean, you can meditate on other things. You can meditate on the Buddha. You can meditate on loving kindness. Many, many different things you can meditate on. But the breath is actually a good object because scientists, research shows that being aware of the breath, being aware of the sensations in the body as the breath is coming in and going out, has a natural calming effect physiologically. What I've heard is that it activates the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the rest and digest mode of being as opposed to the stress response, the sympathetic nervous system. So when we're stressed, that's the sympathetic nervous system. And the, you know, the relaxed state is the parasympathetic nervous system. So paying attention to the breathing, watching the breath coming in and going out, watching sensations in the body, naturally activates the parasympathetic nervous system, meaning our mind, our body is in a more relaxed state. And that's good for us, at least sometimes. Sometimes we need to be the, you know, stress response to get our work done, to get to work on time and so on. So we need that sometimes, but not all the time, not 24 hours a day. So we do sometimes need to slow down and relax. And paying attention to the breath naturally does that. So it naturally puts you into a more relaxed mode of body and mind. But don't think that just because you do that, all your thoughts are suddenly going to go away and not happen anymore. They will continue to happen. But you can learn how to deal with them, how to manage them. So that's one of the big, that's one of the important things about meditation, is learning how to manage your thoughts. So one thing I find helpful, and I always pass this on to people, is it's an analogy given in Buddhism that our mind can be compared to the sky. In a way, it's true because our mind is very vast, just like the sky, and it's naturally clear and naturally pure. And thoughts, memories, fantasies, all this kind of blah, blah, blah in the mind can be compared to clouds. So if you think about the sky, clouds are not always there. Sometimes the sky is completely clear, no clouds at all. But then because of conditions in the atmosphere, moisture or whatever, clouds form, clouds appear, and they move through the sky, and they change, and they go away, they disappear. They're not permanent. They're things that pass through the sky. So in the same way, our mind is naturally calm and clear and pure and vast and spacious. Then because of different conditions, thoughts appear. But they're not permanent. They don't stay all the time. They move, they change, and eventually they go away. So that's a very helpful analogy, to think of our thoughts and memories and fantasies as clouds. They just pass through our mind. They're not permanent. They're not always there. They come and they go. So in that way, we don't have to take them so seriously, get upset about them, or attached to them, excited about them. They're just clouds. Okay. Now, that may sound easy, but putting it into practice is not so easy because we're just used to paying attention to our thoughts and following our thoughts, getting excited about them or upset about them or frightened. Okay, so we tend to react to our thoughts. So it takes a while to learn not to do that and instead see, oh, that's just a thought in my mind. That's just a memory. That's just a feeling, an emotion. It's transitory. Yeah, it's like a cloud in the sky. It just comes and goes. So it takes a while to learn how to do that. But with practice, it gets easier. You'll be able to see thoughts as just like clouds. Let them go and come back. Come back to the breath. Are there any questions? Anyone have any? Yeah. Okay, so the question is, if the thought of loving kindness comes up, should you follow it or come back? That's a good question. Depends on what kind of meditation you're doing. If you're doing loving kindness meditation, then of course you want to have loving kindness come up. So if loving kindness comes up, then that's a good thing. And I mean, in general, it is good to have loving kindness. On the other hand, if you're trying to, I'll explain more as we go along. One type of meditation is concentration. We're trying to develop the ability to keep our mind concentrated, single point of concentration. So in that kind of meditation, you have an object. It could be the breath or it could be an image of the Buddha. But you're trying to train your mind to stay on that one object. And if it wanders away to something else, that means you lose your concentration. So you have to bring it back to that object. So when you're doing concentration meditation, they say anything else, any other thought that comes up, even if it's a good one, a virtuous one, you know, think of the Buddha, or you think of loving kindness, it's still a distraction. It's taking you away from your concentration, so you need to bring it back to your object. So that's, I think, a general rule. You know, if you start off meditating on one thing, and then your mind, you know, wants to jump to something else, even if it's something good, something positive, but it's, it means your mind isn't being very disciplined. Yeah? So you could acknowledge the feeling of loving kindness and say, hello, nice to see you, I'm happy you're here, but right now I'm trying to meditate on something else. So, you know, I'll see you later and come back to your come back to your object of meditation. Yeah. But on the other hand, you know, it is good to have as a kind of basis, a basic state of mind when we're meditating, to have loving kindness, you know, as a basis, because otherwise, you know, if there's people around you when you're meditating, whether they're meditating or not, you could get irritated by them if they make some noise or whatever, you know. So if your loving kindness is absent or not very strong, then there's that danger of getting angry, getting annoyed, getting irritated at other people. So it is good to try to have a state of mind in which you do have loving kindness, even if you're not using that, having that as your main object of meditation, but just have a general feeling of loving kindness towards yourself and others and beings, so that you don't be so likely to get irritated. Does that make sense? Yeah. So I think in some traditions it's recommended that at the beginning, before you start your main meditation, you do a little bit of meditation on loving kindness. May all beings be happy, may all beings be free of suffering, and so on. and then focus on your meditation. And then if it does happen that you get angry, if somebody makes a noise and you can see anger coming up in your mind, to counteract the anger, to remedy the anger, you could bring in loving kindness, you know, to change your attitude and get into a better attitude and then go back to your meditation. I hope I'm not making this too complicated, but does that make sense what I'm saying? Yeah. Anyone else have any? Yes? Is it possible to reach nirvana through meditation? I don't think there's any other way to reach nirvana except through meditation. You can't take an airplane or a boat or a MRT. Huh? Oh, how do you do it? Well, it's not so easy. There's a lot of things you need to do, a lot of steps you need to take. But meditation, I mean, in general, meditation is the way to reach nirvana, because nirvana is a state of mind. It's a mental state. There's no way to get to that state of mind except through meditation. But, I mean, my understanding is I'm not there, okay? I haven't attained nirvana. So, but what I've heard, what I've understood is you need to develop concentration, very strong ability to keep your mind focused, not distracted here and there. But concentration alone is not enough. The main thing that needs to be developed is wisdom. Wisdom is understanding the true nature of things, the reality of things, how things really exist. For example, our own self, who we are, what we are, how we exist. We are mistaken about that. We think we exist in a way that we don't. We think we have a real I, a real me, somewhere inside of us, and we're very attached to that and centered on that, focused on that, and so on, and believe in that. So in reality, you know, as the Buddha experienced and many others have experienced, that sense of I is actually like a hallucination, a fantasy, a creation of the mind. It doesn't exist the way we think. That doesn't mean we don't exist at all. We do exist, but not the way we normally think. So this is what's called selflessness in Buddhism, the absence of a solid, real, permanent I, me, self. So that's the main thing one needs to realize, that the self we normally believe in doesn't really exist. It's not really there. So that's the meaning of wisdom, the wisdom that understands selflessness. So that's the main thing that enables one to reach nirvana. But you need concentration as well to be able to keep your mind focused, because if it's shooting off all over the place all the time, you're not going to be able to, you know, get that wisdom. And then there's a third factor that's really important, and that's ethics. And that's actually the first step, in a way, is to clean up your act. You know, like we tend to do a lot of things that aren't very nice, aren't very virtuous. So we have to really try to, you know, make sure we refrain from non-virtuous, harmful, unethical actions with our body and our speech and our mind, and do virtuous, positive things as much as we can. So the ethics, good ethics, so that's like the foundation. On top of that, you can develop concentration, and then on top of that, wisdom. So those are the three main, in our tradition, they're called the three higher trainings. I think in Pali they say Sila, Samadhi, and Prana, or Pana. I'm not sure the Pali names. But anyway, those are the three main things that one needs to practice, and not just a short amount of time, but I mean, there's no fixed amount of time it takes to reach nirvana. It depends on individuals, how hard we practice, how much karma we have created in the past, and so on. So different factors. Some may be faster, some may take longer. But those are the three main things one needs to work on to reach nirvana. But, you know, even if it takes a long time to get there, it's worth it, because along the way, you know, we become happier and healthier, we're helping others more, our mind becomes more and more peaceful and positive, and so things improve, things get better as we are moving towards that state. So, good question. Yes. Do we meditate at night before sleep or? In the morning. Okay. So the question was, it's about when to meditate, night or morning. So that's a good question. You can actually meditate any time. There's no fixed time when you can and can't meditate. But, and you can also meditate many times a day. It's up to each person. But what's recommended is morning. Morning is a good time for various reasons, because provided you had a good night's sleep and you're rested, then your mind will be more fresh, more alert, and you probably won't have so many distractions, because at the end of the day, if you've been busy working, going here, going there, having lots of conversations and so on, and you sit down and try to meditate, you'll probably still have a lot of thoughts in your mind from the day. So it could be harder to meditate. Whereas in the morning, when you wake up, your mind is probably more calm and peaceful and clear. Also, the environment is usually more peaceful in the morning, especially early morning. Like meditators, you know, people who really meditate a lot, they sometimes get up 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning and do meditation, because that time is very, very quiet and peaceful. But yeah, 3 o'clock is probably early for a lot of people. But even, you know, to get up a half an hour earlier than you normally do, so that you can do some meditation before you go to work, then that's really good. So it's more quiet at that time, your mind will be more fresh, and it's also a good way to start your day. Because if you can start your day with some meditation, even if it's just 5 minutes, you know, you don't have to spend a lot of time, like an hour or 30 minutes, even just 5 minutes of meditation is better than nothing. It's good. And it will help to get you into a better state of mind before you go into your day. So morning is recommended, but everyone is different and everyone's schedule is different. For example, mothers with little kids, little babies, you know, and they wake up early, need to be fed, need to be taken care of. So you may not be able to meditate in the morning. So if there's some other time of the day that you can, you know, have some free time and do meditation, that's fine too. So any time is fine. And like I say, you can also meditate more than once. You can do morning and night and middle of the day as many times as you want. Right? So there's no time that's wrong to meditate. You can experiment and find what works best for you. Is that okay? You can also meditate at work. I mean, depending on your work situation, you know, but even in the middle of your work day, if it's not too noisy and crazy, you know, you can just sit at your desk and, you know, close your eyes and breathe for a few minutes, or while sitting on the bus, or during your lunch break, find some quiet place and just sit quietly. I mean, I sometimes see people doing that, just sitting quietly with their eyes closed on the bus or the train, or not while you're driving, though. Although you can pay attention to your breathing, you have your eyes open, And it's actually quite helpful, you know, because then you're really focused, really attentive, and you'll probably drive much better and not be so likely to get into an accident. So in fact, you know, when you know how to meditate, you can use any activity, anything that you're doing as a practice. We didn't have time to talk about this here, but mindfulness, the practice of mindfulness, of being aware of what's happening moment by moment, that's something you can be doing all day long. When you're working, when you're walking, when you're driving, when you're eating. Okay, so just being attentive, being mindful of what is happening in that moment. So that's something you could be doing all day. Of course, it's hard to do it all day long, but the point is, at certain times in the day, you can just stop and bring your mind home. Come home to the present, this moment. Be aware of your breath, coming in, going out, being aware of whatever else is happening. Even just 1 minute, even doing that for 1 minute can be really helpful. Instead of your mind just shooting here and there. Okay, any more questions? So we'll have our next class on Thursday night. And between now and just 2 days before then, if you can, try to do this practice that we did tonight. If you can't do it for 10 minutes, then you can do it for 5 minutes or 1 minute. But, you know, it's good. Once you learn a practice of meditation, it's good to practice it. Learning meditation is similar to learning anything else. For example, how to play a musical instrument. If you go for lessons to play guitar or piano or violin or whatever, your teacher is going to teach you something, you have to go home and practice. If you go to your next lesson and you didn't do any practice, the teacher's probably going to scold you. So if you want to get good at something, you have to practice. The more you practice, the better you get. So between now and the next class, try to spend at least a little bit of time each day doing this practice. And then when we come back together again on Thursday, we'll do it again together as a group and learn more about it. Okay, so when we do meditation or do anything else that's like a spiritual practice. Traditionally in Buddhism we say we create merit. Merit is positive energy, good energy. It's the cause of happiness and good things happening to ourselves and others. So we have this practice of, when we finish, of dedicating our merit, sharing our merit with others. So let's take a few minutes to do that, just mentally. First, it's good to feel joyful, feel happy about what we've done, making the effort to come here and sit and try to learn meditation and practice meditation. So this is a good thing to do. Good for us, good for others, good for the world. So we've created some good energy, merit. So let's share this merit with others. May it bring good things, happiness, peace, good health, well-being, and positive experiences, more love and compassion, less anger, hatred, selfishness, to all other people, all other beings everywhere. And may it help all of us get closer to nirvana, to enlightenment.